So Tuesday's Forum in Charleston is the third and final stop on this mini tour for PolitiFact. You all have stopped in Mobile, Alabama, and Tulsa, Oklahoma. These places, like Charleston, were picked specifically for their heavy support of Donald Trump. I should mention that a Rasmussen poll in September of last year, towards the very end of the campaign season, showed that 88% of Trump supporters don't believe fact-checking organizations such as yours. Tell us a little bit about making these choices for the locations of these events and what you all have seen so far.
Sure. Well, I'm glad you cited that figure because that was really kind of a motivating factor for us in deciding to do this. We got a little bit of grant money from the Knight Foundation, which funds journalism projects. And, you know, as a fact-checking organization, we want to get factual, trustworthy information out there. And it's kind of depressing and disturbing for us if a large chunk of the country just doesn't want to hear what we have to say. So we'd like to kind of bridge the divide with these trips. And these are, you know, three solidly red states. You know, I think a big motivation for me in wanting to do this is to sort of reach out to people who might not even know that we exist, or if they do know that we exist, to try to get them to trust us more. And that can really only be done on a face-to-face basis. So much of the political discourse today is totally online, often anonymous. People are tempted and are able to throw you know, darts at each other without seeing them in person. And so we have set up you know, meetings. We just finished one with a bunch of GOP officials here in Morgantown, about a half dozen people, as a sort of a freewheeling conversation about their concerns on the media, about us in particular, but also just in general the media and what they do and don't like, and ways that we can sort of, you know, address their concerns.
Let's talk for a moment about the methodology behind PolitiFact and your all's Truth-O-Meter. If you've been online, you've probably seen this somewhere or another in a social media feed. If you would, tell me not only about how this fact-checking takes place, but also the choices of statements to be fact-checked made by President Trump or other public officials. How do you make those decisions? And if you would, walk us through that entire process from start to finish.
Sure. So let's start with the choosing of statements to check. We look through speeches, transcripts of TV appearances by major politicians. We also, just sort of automatically hear things that everybody's talking about. And we just know you have to fact check because everybody's wondering about it. And then we also get a lot of tips from our readers who email us to say, hey, you know, I saw this in my Facebook feed. Can you check this out? It might be a meme, or it might be, some other questionable posting. So we sort of sift through all these and figure out, first of all, a very basic question, is this checkable? Is this something which is a factual question, or is it something that is an opinion or maybe a prediction, which makes it very hard, if not impossible, to fact check? So we choose a particular segment of that quote. We don't check entire speeches. We don't check entire paragraphs. We'll check about one sentence or maybe two at most, because we want to zero in on something which is narrow and tangible, and we want to be able to sort of not get a statement that we check where it's got three or four different parts going in different directions, and how do you rate it in the end? So we find a suitable statement to check, and then we do just regular journalism, pretty much. We talk to experts, we find documents, we do data queries and databases. After 4 or 5 hours of work, sometimes more if it's a complicated story, we will write it up, the editor will do a first edit. The writer of the story proposes a rating on our 6-point scale, which I should say is true, mostly true, half true, mostly false, false, and pants on fire. And the writer suggests one of those. The editor can kind of agree with that or not. But then the actual decision on the final rating goes to what's called the Star Chamber. It's that first editor, joined by two totally new editors to that story. And the writer usually sits in, but they don't have a vote. It's basically the three editors vote. And, you know, sometimes this can be really easy. It might take 2 minutes because it's a very clear-cut fact check. But sometimes it gets to be a bit of a knockdown, drag-out battle between one editor who thinks it should be mostly false and one who thinks that and two who think it should be half true. Often the power of persuasion, you know, that third person can be convinced to come along on the other's rating. Sometimes it's as simple as changing some of the language to maybe give greater emphasis to a certain point that the person who wanted mostly false was trying to make. Generally speaking, it gets worked out and the final ruling holds. That said, I kind of consider the rating to be equivalent to the headline of a news story. It's a summary. It's our best distillation of what we think we found. And just as you wouldn't want to only read the headline and not read the story if you want to fully understand something, you also don't want to just see our rating and then not read the story. Because the story, what we've tried to do is to be thorough in the evidence we provide. And we provide all of our sources that are listed on the right-hand side of the page. And the source list and the story itself has the actual click links to the data that we used. And all of our comments are on the record from our sources. If you disagree with our rating, that's fine. We're not the voice of God. We're just three editors sitting in a room trying our best to find the best way to summarize a point. If people want to disagree with the rating, that's definitely their prerogative, and certainly reasonable people can disagree on what the final rating should be. But at the very least, what we do want people to experience is that they read the story that we've written, maybe click through some of the links to make sure we're doing it right, and feel, okay, you know, I've learned something from this. I might not agree with the final ruling on it, but, I know more about this topic than I did, and it seems like a reasonable argument.
You know, I think it's safe to say that a lot of this conversation comes down to a wider distrust in the news media. I should mention a recent Gallup poll shows trust in the media remains extremely low, and a lot of people might argue that President Trump, his cries of fake news, plays some role in that. But, in the same breath, we should also point out that Gallup's polling numbers put his approval rating hovering somewhere under about, 40% or so. How big of a factor is Trump's rhetoric and the media criticism playing into all this with his approval rating being so low? Is there any explanation for that at all?
It's a fair question. I don't really know the answer to that. But I will say that I think what the president has done with his rhetoric is he's really bolstered his own supporters in a sort of anti-media frame of mind, but also at the same time bolstered his opponents in more of a pro-media frame of mind. And unfortunately, it breaks down. It further sort of divides us between those who, trust the media and those who don't. And, I see that as unfortunate. I think that's part of what we're trying to do here during our visit. We want people to have open minds and to be open to new arguments and factual data, and not just simply brush it off as being, untrustworthy without even giving a chance. And we want to sort of reach out to people, as we've been doing on this trip, who might not necessarily follow us currently or might be predisposed against us, and try to present ourselves as, real people who are trying our best to sort of navigate a difficult challenge in finding what's true, and try to sort of get people to give us a shot.
And I want to wrap things up by, saying that knowing all this and with the news media being hyper aware of this climate, we here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting are aware. The other news outlets in the state and across the country are also very aware of this. With Trump in office, the public's perception of the media, all of that, what is the answer, if anything? It seems like reporters are going to great lengths to be transparent in their reporting methods. their sourcing of documents, of any sort of materials that come that make their way into the reporting, vetting of sources, interviews, all of that. We also saw a big push from the New York Times to make the reporting staff more self-aware in how they're using social media. They set guidelines and even opened that up to the public to see to what lengths they're going. Is all of this a step forward? If so, if not, either way, what else needs to be done?
Sure. I think several of those steps are wise steps. I do like the idea of journalists on social media trying to avoid very opinionated statements. My own Twitter feed is pretty plain vanilla. I share my stories, and I share a couple stories that I think are good by other journalists and talk a little bit. Like today, I'm tweeting out about some of the things we've been doing here in West Virginia. So I think that's probably a smart decision. I totally like the idea of transparency of sources. I mean, as I said, we at PolitiFact try to be very transparent about that in terms of listing all our sources and not using off-the-record comments or like anonymous comments from sources. I think ultimately, while journalists and journalism in general can do useful things like that, small steps, I think over the longer term, it actually comes down to the education system and sort of making sure that young kids growing up today are sort of open-minded, intellectually curious, and know how to navigate the World Wide Web in a way that they can know what is questionable information and what is trustworthy. It's really kind of an issue that our K through 12 and even college education systems need to start focusing on, so that kids have the tools that they need to figure out what is true and what is not in what's kind of currently a wild west of the internet.
All right, Lou. Well, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.